Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. I know he means business when he puts his glasses on. That's Tom Dienhart there on the other side. He's dead serious. Now, we had did this last year, as you may remember, during the heart of the pandemic, I guess you'd call it, where we did some historical views. And we're going to be doing that for our Saturday simulcast on most weekends throughout the summer. But we'll bring the get the whole band together and Brian Newbert when we want, when we've got more issue related stuff to talk about too. So stay tuned, but this will be our plan throughout the summer to kind of find some historical things. And what we're hitting on today is obviously been a lot of talk about Purdue and Northwestern playing November the 20th at Wrigley Field. And Tom and I are, we're not two old men smoking cigars. We're close, but we wanted to talk about the baseball venues Purdue's played in historically. And we think we've got a comprehensive list, but we also want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel at Purdue, at Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel nominee. Voting is open. So visit PurdueUnionClub.com for more details and to show your Purdue pride. And today it's history at Purdue, on Purdue's campus. My daughter happens to be part of it. I don't think I've ever had a graduation at Ross-Ade Stadium. Well, this afternoon, or actually 10 o'clock, depending on what time you're listening to this, there will be a graduation in Ross-Ade Stadium, and my daughter will be a part of it. But also, the Union Club Hotel is full to the brim. The hotels are full this weekend in town, which is a great thing to see, and hopefully that will be the case as we get closer to that 2021 football season. So as well, in that opening game against Oregon State, September 4th. Okay, that is a long intro, Tom, but you know, it really got us thinking about some of these venues Purdue's played in over the year that are old baseball stadiums. And that game at Wrigley Field, heck, you worked for the Cubs for a while. That is a great venue. You weren't old enough to ever see the Bears in Wrigley Field. I never did in person. I watched them on TV, but tell me about, you remember also Northwestern in Illinois, I think in 2010, played in that facility, but it's a big deal. And certainly a spur, even at the $110 ticket price, there are going to be a lot of Purdue fans and Northwestern fans in assuming that they can have full capacity. My guess is that facility will be at or near full capacity for that football game late November.
It's going to be a high ticket, Alan, and an iconic venue. All the alums, we've talked about the Purdue alums in that area in Chicagoland. Who knows, by November when that game is played, maybe there's a lot on the line for both teams too, which up the ante. So, man, you're exactly right, Alan. The excitement there's big. You're exactly right. 2010 was when Illinois and Northwestern played in that, at 1060 West Addison Street right there.
Right.
In Addison. Illinois won pretty big that day. I was doing some research on it after we spoke earlier this week. And I reached out to Ron Zook, who's the Illini coach. And I'm going to talk to Nathan Shielhouse, and who was the quarterback of the Illini that day. It was a big day for Illinois. And, of course, Ron Zook's memories are great. Anytime you win, it's great, right? And you beat your rival. Yeah. And it was a weird day that day. Anybody, I'm sure a lot of listeners remember, where the way the stadium was, or the field was configured on the stadium, was such one of the end zones, there just wasn't enough space, a safe space between, I guess, an outfield wall and an end zone where a player could collide into the hard brick outfield there. So the offense has always had to go one way. So it was kind of a unique circumstance that was dictated by how the field was laid out. I've begun trying to reach out to people with the Cubs. I have a contact name. They actually got back in touch with me, but the guy said they're so buried right now trying to figure out their capacity for June. So I'm going to check back later this summer. But long story short, these are fun stories for me and fun memories. Anytime something unique happens like this, it gets my mind racing. And you think about how cool it is. I think Purdue actually played in Yankee Stadium or the Polo Grounds. I'm a big old baseball fan. I grew up just paging through books of old black and white photos of those baseball players. My dad had me play this game called All-Star Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
You put
the spinners. Yeah.
I
love those things.
I learned all these players. I was about 8 years old. I learned all these players' names. And my mind got to racing. And, of course, back then, Alan, there was no video hardly. And all we had were pictures to look at. And you had to kind of wonder about these guys. And they came to life for me in photos. And then to see how Purdue actually played in some of these venues, it's pretty cool to think about. And it's going to be a special day that day, win or lose, for everybody to see the Boilermakers play. And again, a stadium I know that you like very much, and I know you're a big Cub fan, so it's going to be very near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, it is, and it is also, you know, and I think the Bears had that problem. They didn't care about guys running into the side of the – back then, I think the end zone was only 8 yards long. And you were alluded to the fact, we think they have that problem solved.
Not sure.
But we're not 100% sure. So we'll get to the bottom of that over the summer.
Real quick, yeah, after that, 1970 was the last year the Bears played there.
Yeah, and with Bobby Douglas at quarterback and Gale Sayers, I think Douglas would have been a rookie that year, the old left-hander from Kansas, and you know, some great Jack Concannon, I think, was their quarterback too. That done those late years for the Bears. But yeah, I do remember some of those games, watching them on TV. Back in the day, though, I never went to a football game in Wrigley Field. But you talked about Yankee Stadium. At least in terms of our research, that is the first baseball stadium Purdue played in. 1932, they played NYU. And they had played on the East Coast three or four times prior to that. But if our records are right, and they may be wrong, there may be somebody that can point this out, but we think that, and according to the Purdue Media Guide, we're going to lay this all on the Purdue Media Guide if it's incorrect. So according to the Purdue Media Guide, the first venue, Major League Baseball venue, was Yankee Stadium. 34-9, Purdue beat the NYU, the Titans, I believe it was. Dwayne Purvis, the old Dwayne Purvis burger from Triple X, 156 yards rushing. Paul Moss, who became an All-American. Purdue had two or three All-Americans on that 32 team. A guy named Roy Horstman, Paul Moss as well, had a pick six in that game, pick six in that game, and Purdue wins easily. But you talked about those Polo Ground games. Purdue played four times in 5 years. I want to say, or actually 6 years, lost each time, but Fordham was the opponent, and they had a pretty good right, well, at least a famous right guard, and a guy named, I'm asking you now, you know who it was.
Yeah, Vince Lombardi. I tell you what, yeah, Vince Lombardi is one of the people I look up to the most, Alan, and he was a seven block of granite for the Fordham Rams.
Funny things. Excuse my technical stuff here. Okay, we're back. Go ahead.
Yeah, Vince Lombardi to me is he's one of my heroes. I don't know. I'm fascinated with Vince Lombardi, watching all the old documentaries on him and reading about him.
And the blocks of granite, right? So that's what they were called.
And he was one of the seven blocks of granite at Fordham, which still plays football. I believe they're in the Patriot League, a non-scholarship FCS league where they play like Bucknell and schools of that ilk. But back then, Fordham was a bigger deal. And Vince Lombardi was a native of Brooklyn, New York. played football for the Rams and before he went off to his iconic coaching career. So yeah, the Polo Grounds, that's another one. I follow some Instagram and Facebook accounts that are dedicated to old baseball stadiums. And every time I see a picture of the Polo Grounds, it just blows me away, Alan. I'm sure you, that horseshoe look to it.
Oh yeah.
The extremely deep center field, the short left and right field. And then you can see Yankee Stadium in the background. I mean, it was that close to Yankee Stadium. And again, you think of all the great players that played there for the Giants, the New York baseball Giants, like Mel Ott and those guys. It's cool to think Purdue actually played on hollow grounds like that way back when.
Well, you know, I know that Yankee Stadium back, they had that 297-foot porch in right field right down the line. And I know that I think the Polo Grounds had, either, I don't know if it was left or right field, really, it had the short porch, as they say. And then it would jet out, you know.
Yeah,
out,
center field it did. It kind of jetted out. It was really weird.
And in Yankee Stadium, I was always intrigued about Yankee Stadium was the fact that they had monuments out there in the field of play.
They did.
But it was like 480 feet back. You know, that really bothered me as a kid. And I think they later years, they enclosed and put the monuments inside the fence. But just crazy stuff. Purdue played Fordham four times. Like I said, they lost him, and Fordham was ranked third, fifth, 17th, and third, number three. And then I think in 37 36, reading the write-up, in the Lafayette Journal and Courier that Fordham, after beating Purdue, was the odds-on favorite to get picked for the Rose Bowl. It never made it to the Rose Bowl. Pitt went that year, and the Rams, if I'm looking it up correctly, at least during that four-year period, never made it to Pasadena. But that was a big game, obviously, for them, and they beat Purdue in that game. Skip to 1947, Fenway Park, and Purdue plays the Boston, what was it, Terriers, right? Nickname, and 62-7 Purdue won. So that must have been a miss. It was a mismatch, obviously. I don't know a lot of the details of that game. I know Hank Stram played in that game, and Bob DeMoss was the quarterback. And I remember Demo talking about playing in that venue, and it was like Boston, the Terriers kind of, I don't know if they brought their, just weren't ready for them. It was like it could have been 100-0, but they beat them pretty easily on that, in that day. But what, you know, again, you play in Wrigley Field, you play in Fenway Park, two of the, still in Major League Baseball, the two most probably iconic parks in the history of baseball, at least the current history of it.
Yeah, I know the New England Patriots, when they were the Boston Patriots, played home field for a while, and they had Nick Bonacani playing for them when they first came in the AFL. I've seen some cool documentaries on that old league. And you're right. I've never gotten to see a game in Fenway Park. I've driven by it. I went to a football game at BC once, but that's a place I would love to get to. And I think they had planned a bowl game there recently, sort of like the Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium.
I think that's correct.
I think it got scrubbed. Never even got off the ground. But anyway, it would be cool to see any type of an event in Fenway Park, like you said. The history, the Green Monster, on and on it goes, and the great moments. And Purdue got to be part of it, like you said, at least had their shadows cast there. And for a big difference, the Terriers way back in 1947.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And I think in sports, we think we play a role as fans or in what happened. My first trip to baseball, obviously I haven't seen football in Fenway Park, but 1978, I saw the Royals and the Red Sox.
Really?
And the Royals, and that was the year of the famous collapse of the Red Sox and the Bucky Dent home run in the playoff game. But the Red Sox scored, I thought, oh, I'm going to go see all these home runs. The Red Sox scored one run in three games. We went to a whole, my sister was a big baseball fan living out there, and they scored one run and lost all three games. And that was kind of the start of their slide, which in 1969, see, I was responsible for the Cubs because my first baseball game of my life was on August 21st, 1969, the Cubs lose to the Braves. And of course the start of their slide that the Mets overtook them and won the pennant and the World Series, the amazing Mets. So, but we're digressing here, but that's part of what we do. But LA Coliseum, interesting. Purdue's played there, I believe, three times in the regular season and postseason. They didn't play them postseason. But the interesting thing is that 1959 game, a couple months before I was born, they played to a 0-0 tie. And I think Billy Kilmer was the quarterback for UCLA, but that was the same time that the Dodgers were playing in, when they just moved west in 1958, and they were playing in the LA Coliseum, and Purdue had the definition of a pitcher's duel, except it wasn't a pitcher's duel because nobody scored. Purdue played there, and then a couple more times as well. They played USC out there in the 19-6 loss in 75. Now, of course, by that time, the Dodgers were playing in Dodger Stadium. I don't know if the California or the LA Angels also might have played a little time in the Coliseum. I'm not sure. But then, of course, Purdue in 79 go out and play in the Smog Bowl in a loss, 31-21, really bad air conditions, so to speak.
That 79 game was at the Rose Bowl.
It was the LA Coliseum. They played them in the Coliseum. Yeah. Now UCLA played in the Rose Bowl, but not in 79. They were sharing the venue with USC, and Purdue went out there. It was really like I said, a bad weather. Purdue was ranked fifth in the country. Yeah. Mark Herman was the quarterback. A lot of, real bad smog alert. Freeman McNeil, that was his first game of really jumping, becoming a national story. I don't know that Rick Neuheisel.
No, I think that'd have been.
No, he was later, right? 83.
Next year, UCLA came to Rossay the next year. I remember they won again. Yeah, I think their quarterback, his last name was Ramsey.
Yeah. Tom Ramsey, who played in the NFL. Right. I think that's right. But Purdue went out and got beat both times out there. Yeah. And I remember the 19-6 loss to USC was a tie game, also 0-0 at halftime. So Purdue played six consecutive quarters in the Coliseum without giving up a point and without scoring a point. But then USC and Ricky Bell and Vince Evans, the quarterback, beat Purdue 19-6 and then returned the trip to Ross-Ade Stadium. Did you go to that game in 76?
It was packed. I was about 10 years old. And the only games I got to go to back then were I got to sit in the knothole section when they were.
Yeah, that wasn't a knothole game.
When they're playing a MAC team in September. That's
you and me both in those ages.
I never forget when they came to town, man. What a big deal that was, Alan. The USC Trojans were coming to West Lafayette, Indiana. Ricky Bell and John McKay. I mean, you talk about star power. I mean, and that was a big deal. I know Purdue lost, but still, it's so cool when those type of teams come to town.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, also, don't forget here, 1998, too. The Carson Palmer, Drew Brees picks.
Yeah, you know what? Again, not seeing the forest for the trees. That's right. Purdue
played, you were at that game, too, right?
Yeah, 100 degrees. It was the hottest. Yeah. Or I think the actual official temperature was 99, but I remember seeing the little temperature gauge on the wall at the Coliseum, well over 100 degrees, and holy cow. But Drew Brees' debut, and Purdue got off to a good start, did not finish strong in the second half, had a lead at the halftime, but USC went on to beat Purdue in that one. Was it the pigskin or the kick?
It was pigskin.
Yeah. That was
a fast fact for 1959. The Dodgers actually played in the World Series that year.
Yeah.
They played the Chicago White Sox, the Go-Go White Sox. So Purdue actually played in a venue that would go on to host, was probably getting ready to host the World Series shortly after Purdue played there in September of 59.
That's right. Great point. And Nellie Fox, right? And the Dodgers won that series.
Yeah, the Dodgers won. That was only their second year in L.A., I think. And
yeah.
And if anybody looks at how that stadium, a baseball field, was configured on the Coliseum, I think left field was about 250 feet. And right field was like 400 feet.
It didn't serve it well for a long time to be able to do that. But a great venue. And yet Purdue never had a lot of success out there. No. But playing really good teams. Obviously, when you play UCLA and USC out there. All right, the next venue we want to hit in order, Fulton County Stadium, I should say, home of the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta Falcons for a long time, in a situation where they were, the Purdue played 1978 and 1984 to different results. What do you remember the game on Christmas Day?
I remember both. I remember watching that game on Christmas Day. Calvin Clark had a big day. Marcus Jackson. You know, that was the real start of things, as you know, Alan. You were a freshman that year, I think. At
Purdue. Yeah.
And that's when Jim Young was just getting cranked up, his second year in town. You know, and Purdue was off and away. That was a fun day. I'll never forget. They always had a giant team picture of that thing blown up. Probably still hangs up there over in the old volleyball facility.
Yeah.
Sitting there studying the faces. All the players had on these long sleeve yellow, nice yellow sweaters they had.
Yeah.
And again, those were the heroes. I was in about middle school. And again, Keena Turner and Kevin Motz. And I love Ken Lauschen, guys. And West Lafayette High School later, when I was a junior, I think it was my junior year, we had one of the old offensive linemen help coach us, a guy named Don Hall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who's now deceased, but he was a great guy, and he's part of that offensive line there. And again, those guys are my heroes. And, boy, Alan, those days, Ross-Ade Stadium was packed.
Yeah.
And walking to games across Grant Street, walking up Evergreen Avenue across Northwestern with my dad. And, man, it was a magical time, and I'd love to see the program get back to what it was like then.
Yeah, 1978, that game was played, like I said, on Christmas Day. There was a playoff game the day before in a rainstorm between, I think, the Eagles and the Falcons. I don't know who won, but I do remember it was a big deal, especially for the African-American players, Calvin Clark, Keena Turner, all these pictures, Ray Smith with Jane Kennedy, who was who was this CBS and really kind of ahead of her time, because she was also African-American analyst and part of that NFL Today with Jimmy the Greek and all that. They did that game, or they were around that game. Big deal for those guys to have be a part of that. And I do remember, I think Purdue was ahead. Purdue was ahead like 21-0 before Pepper Rogers, the coach at Georgia Tech.
Eddie Lee Ivory.
Yeah, but he was hurt, right? And didn't play. And Eddie Lee Ivory was their running back, and Purdue just jumped all over him. And it was 41-7 before anything really happened. And Purdue kind of slid its way to an easy win in that game.
Calvin Clark's an Atlanta native.
Yep, big deal for him to play there. And I remember I had a fraternity brother named Matt Buncheck, and he was a walk-on, and they won by so much that Matt got into that game. I remember that too. As a defensive lineman, that was a big deal for us as well. And to be able to watch him play. Then Purdue went back there in '84. Leon Burnett's one bowl season, and Jim Everett, the only team I think in Purdue history still to beat Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Michigan in the same year. They go down and play Virginia, lead at halftime, 24-14, but lose to Don Majkowski, the magic man, and Virginia in that game. You remember, what was your memories of that? I remember that game, New Year's Eve, very warm New Year's Eve in Atlanta. That I do remember. And I remember that Jim Coletto, I think it was, and Leon Burnett might have had exchanged words after that game, because Jim left after that year for Ohio State as an assistant coach. But what else do you recall from that one?
Fun. Yeah, it was my sophomore year in college, and disappointed it ended like that, I guess.
Yeah.
You look back at the amount of talent on that team, the guys went on to play in the NFL. Especially on offense, it's kind of stupefying, but that sort of set up a lot of a highly anticipated 1985 season. And that's the fall of 85 when I first met you.
Yeah,
there you go. You and Barb Brink.
Yeah.
Information office.
Pride of Logansport, Barb. Yep, absolutely.
It was funny. You talked about the Magic Man. They also had a big offensive tackle named Jim Dombrowski, who played in the NFL. Yeah. And a running back named Barry Word, a real big back who played with the Chiefs and Christian Okoye. They were good, and that was a very success-star Virginia team, Alan. They had not had any success for years. They were a real punching bag in the ACC. And that win, I talked to some people at UVA later during my career, and that was a big deal for them, man. To win that game, I mean, that really thought that their program had arrived. And they had some really nice years if you fast forward into the late 80s, early 90s, when they had Sean Moore and those guys. But again, you had to be happy for UVA. But anyway, it was a tough loss for Purdue. But still, that season's always going to be special to me. You mentioned the three big wins. Of course, the start in the Hoosier Dome against Notre Dame. I mean, that's one of the greatest games ever.
Yeah, Purdue's win over the 23-21 win over the Fighting Irish in the dedication game, which really was a home game for Notre Dame. Purdue didn't have very many of the fans. There was all those Notre Dame fans that got bused down to from South Bend to West Lafayette, Notre Dame students, I should say. That Notre Dame has fans everywhere. Well, we kind of jumped over the other venue that that played Major League Baseball, and Purdue played it when the Houston Astros were playing the Houston Astrodome, 1979. Purdue's the last game of the 1970s, New Year's Eve. The Blue Bonnet Bowl, Purdue gets up to a big lead, has to hang on for dear life, actually has a game-winning drive to win that game over Tennessee. I know that Willie Gault was playing for Tennessee. You can get that game on YouTube, and I went and watched that. And I'm still amazed at how good a receiver I know it's not an obligatory Bart Burrow mention, and my gosh, did he make catches in that game. And of course, Dave Young gets the game winner down the stretch, but Purdue's lone 10-win season came from that victory on New Year's Eve in the Houston Astrodome. And it was all the love you blue at that time. I remember going, I did go to that game. I was a basketball manager. We drove all night after Purdue played Tulsa, drove all night from Mackey Arena to down to Houston. I don't think my mom still, rest her soul, not happy with me on that one. But we made it down there. Got a traffic ticket, I remember that. And going a little too fast. But it was a lot of fun to, in the whole city of Houston. It was big when the kind of country in Houston was becoming big again. And Bum Phillips and all that, and all the cowboy boots and hats and people that Purdue fans bought. Purdue was right in its own environment there, and they got the win there in the last minute to beat Johnny Majors in Tennessee. But remember, did you watch that game on TV, or do you remember it? Yeah,
we watched on television. Again, that was a great team, like you said, the only 10-win team in school history. Heck, Alan, I mean, how many better teams has Purdue had in its history? I mean, and the win total speaks for itself, but that doesn't always mean you're the best team. But this got to be one of the top five teams, I think, in school history, maybe. Again,
certainly just, in the modern era, I don't think.
In the modern era, you know, and then to beat an SEC school, you know, the SEC wasn't what it's become, but still, Purdue has not had a lot of success. Not many schools do when they go head to head with those SEC schools. And to beat a school like Tennessee, which has always had great tradition going back to General Neyland and all the great players they had over the years, to knock them off was just another feather in the cap for Purdue and Jim Young, and set up a great 1980 season, Allen. Of course, that season next year started against Notre Dame, right, with the Mark Herman injury. He wasn't able to play. So, again, like a great memory, and it's kind of cool. You got to see a game in the Astrodome. That's a venue I never got a chance to step foot in. I've watched a lot of shows on it. You know, the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's a big deal. Still stands, too, I guess.
Still stands.
My grandparents didn't know what to do with it.
My grandparents went there the first year it was open, and they brought back this, like, this big souvenir program, and I've still got it. And the ushers back then even were dressed up like astronauts.
Oh, yeah.
They took the space theme to the hilt, and just a real neat part of that space age era of the 1960s.
Yeah, I got a chance to see baseball there, I think, in 1971.
Wow.
St. Louis Cardinals. It was the only time I saw baseball. I thought it was just the coolest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And it was at its time. Now, so I guess the answer to the trivia question is the last true baseball venue Purdue played in would be, but that's really, I guess I still, you know, I keep changing my answer, because it really would be 2007 when Purdue played Minnesota. Would have been the last time they played in the Metrodome, because obviously the Twins played in that venue. So that would be the trivia question of the last time Purdue played in a baseball venue.
The last non-Big Ten baseball venue.
Yeah. And the last non-Big Ten baseball venue, I guess, would be Fulton County Stadium, right? In terms of that. So,
yeah.
So that is a true statement. Actually,
it's the LA Coliseum then, I guess, 1998.
Yeah, that's right. Because that was USC in that game. But as you can tell, this is a moving target. And I always worry when we do research that you miss, like you said, you pointed out a couple things of the can't see the forest for the trees. I'd forgotten about the Coliseum in 98. And then I forgot about playing in the Metrodome, obviously, where the Minnesota Twins won the World Series by playing in that facility as well. So that will be a great thing when we when Purdue gets an opportunity to play in November in Wrigley Field, and a truly iconic facility, and a fun afternoon. And you're right, the way things go, way Northwestern's played, that there may be a lot on the line for that. You have to hope, if you're a Purdue fan, that there'll at least be a bowl bid in competition, because that'll be the second to last regular season game before Purdue takes on Indiana to close out the regular season. So,
hey, real quick, Alan, before you sign off, tell Purdue fans too that the Boilermakers in Chicago have played, obviously, in Evanston. They're going to play in Wrigley Field, and They've never played in Comiskey Park, but they have played in Soldier Field. Talk about that real quick.
Right, 1931 against Northwestern in a game that was played for charity. Purdue beat the Wildcats 7-0 in a freezing cold day. And I don't know where did they, and I should again, where did they play? Where was their home field? I think they had a facility on campus.
Yeah, they must have said.
Back in the day, of course, Amos Alonzo Stagg there, but you know, Dave Revson would be a good guy to get on this because he wrote a really good book about the early college football in the Big Ten football, really from the 1890s up through maybe the 1920s. Some really interesting parallels to what is going on. No name, image, and likeness then, but a lot of worried about injuries and ringers and betting and all kinds of scandal going on. There's nothing new under the sun, as we've learned living long enough, you'd find that out. So, all right, we're going to continue this. We'll continue this look down history, and we'll come up with some other topics over the summer. We appreciate all of you that took the time to listen and watch today. Hope you guys have a great rest of the weekend. I want to thank our sponsor. And of course, that is the Union Club at Purdue. It's a Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel nominee, and voting is open. So visit PurdueUnionClubHotel.com for more details and to show your Purdue pride. Tom, have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll look forward to it's always fun for us to kind of try to figure out. There's always good angles to the great history of Purdue football and the great history of college football as a whole, as we all hope that we get back to normal for the 2021 season.
Thank you, buddy. It's always fun.
All right. Have a great rest of the weekend, all. And thanks for viewing and thanks for listening. You know what? We're back and we forgot one. 1943. I'd looked that up, and that was Purdue's undefeated season. 9-0, Alex Agassi and company, and all the ringers that came from in World War II. But where did Purdue play?
Yeah, it was a municipal stadium in Cleveland, Ohio, of course, home of the Cleveland Indians, which had great teams through the 40s and 50s. So, according to the media guide.
That's absolutely right. And Ohio State was playing some games up there. I'm not sure why, but Purdue beat the Buckeyes in 43, and that was a key to Purdue's 9-0 undefeated season. And I think number 5 ranking, maybe the highest that Purdue was ranked at the end of the season at any point in time. And that's our epilogue for today. So, again, if we keep going, we'll come up with new answers. But appreciate that, Tom, that you had that before we signed off. Thanks again to the Purdue Union Club Hotel. Thanks to all of you for listening and watching. And we'll be back next week with our podcast on Purdue sports, Purdue football and basketball history.